Rain and snow showers will persist into the early afternoon across the region, especially for portions of central and northern Illinois. Meanwhile, accumulating snow will fall across central and western Wisconsin today. A westerly wind will bring much cooler and drier air into the region tonight. The cool and dry trend will dominate the weather pattern across the Midwest through the end of the week. High temperatures today will range from the upper 30s in southwestern Wisconsin to 60 degrees along the Ohio River Valley. Lows tonight will range from the low 20s to the low 30s across the Midwest. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy and windy with a chance of showers early this afternoon, cooler with the temperature around 40. The wind from the west at 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 40 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, windy, and much colder. Look for a low of 32. The wind out of the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to up to 30 miles per hour this evening. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and cool, the high 45, with the wind from the west at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy and cold, we'll see a low of 28. The wind out of the west from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday, Veterans Day, mostly sunny and breezy. Look for a high in the low 50s. The wind will be from the southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Friday night and Saturday, mostly clear with a low Friday night in the upper 30s and a high Saturday in the upper 50s. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid 40s. The outlook for Sunday, mostly cloudy and warmer with a high in the low 60s. At noon Central Time, much of the region was under a cloudy sky. Some locations reported showers, some of rain, some of snow. And temperatures ranged from the mid-30s to the upper 50s, so you can see where that front is. At Rockford, light snow was reported at the top of the hour, the temperature 34. Cloudy at O'Hare, where it was 51 at noon. Bloomington reported 41 degrees, Mattoon 43, Carbondale 49. At South Bend, 56 degrees, 58 at Indianapolis, 51 at both Terre Haute and Lafayette. And Willard Airport reported light rain at the top of the hour, the temperature 41. The dew point 38, the relative humidity 89%, the wind out of the west at 28 with gusts to 39 miles per hour, and the barometric pressure 29.82 and rising. And at 12:40, 40 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Like other nursing homes in the area, the Champaign County Nursing Home has faced delays in state payments, numerous complaint investigations, and trouble with staff retention. The Champaign County Board hired a management firm to address these problems in 2008. A week ago, a new administrator stepped in at the nursing home. Effingham native Chuck Schutte replaced former administrator Andrew Buffenbarger, who took another position within the management firm. Schutte spoke with CU Citizen Access reporter Pam Dempsey about his plans for the job.
I size it up that since I am a registered nurse, I have my license in nursing too, so I size it up that this is a nursing home, it's not a medical home, and that my function here is to be not just an administrator, but also, in a way, a nursing leader. And we want to be able to work on nurses, and we want them to feel like they're being professionally challenged and they're being allowed to function as professionals. That's kind of what I like to see. Sometimes that's not missing. That's not just nursing homes. That's acute care areas also show where nurses just aren't being valued for what they really are and what they can offer people. And I want to try to make sure that that is being sensed here, that and the nurses feel that here. And hopefully that nurses will say this is where we want to work.
So would you say that was one of your goals? I mean, do you have, you know, your on your to-do list, what does that include, and what goals do you have, say, in the next year and potentially the next five?
Well, I got a long to-do list. That's definitely on the list. I want to be a lot of technical things, which really aren't as much fun as working on the professional. But I would like to be able to develop this professional pride in the nursing areas, and that's probably top on the top of my mind. I want to make sure that we endeavor to be regulatory compliant. You know, there's all kinds of rules and regs. This is heavily regulated industry, and for good reason. It needs to be that way. We're talking about the safety of our residents, so it needs to be that way. And I want to really work on that to make sure that, you know, each and every time we're surveyed, that we're actually reducing the number of tags, and that we are really spending a lot of time making sure that we are in compliance and that our patients are not our patients. I use patients all the time because I come from the acute care side, but our residents are safe. Those are the two things that are sitting on the top of my mind. If I had the expertise, I would say, well, I'm going to go talk to some lobbyists and I'm going to get that money from the state, but I have people doing that for me, so I'll stay off of that.
So some of the state complaint or the complaint investigations into the nursing homes, there was one earlier this year where a resident was left on a bedpan for about 6 to 8 hours and had some open sores develop from that. There have been other numerous investigations into this nursing home, whether complaints have been unfounded or otherwise. Is there any just general information you can offer that might kind of put those complaints into perspective?
I wouldn't be able to speak on that. It's that things happen. You have to go in. You have to study those things. You have to be very diligent about creating a plan that will minimize reoccurrence. And you have to go on from there. And that's what I'm kind of here for, to go on from there. I do know that it's really difficult trying to be in compliance with all these issues. I'm not saying that they don't need to be there. They do need to be there, but you have to have a really dedicated workforce. You have to very highly trained workforce, and they just have to stay on top of it all the time. And sometimes things happen, and you hate it when it does, and you have to correct it, and that's what we're going to do.
Champaign County Nursing Home Administrator Chuck Schutte speaking with CU Citizen Access reporter Pam Dempsey. To read more about the new administrator and to share your own nursing home experiences, visit cu-citizenaccess.org, cu-citizenaccess.org. The Australian Parliament has approved a tough new tax on greenhouse gas emissions, as Stuart Cullen reports. This comes after years of controversy.
The highly divisive issue of pricing greenhouse gas emissions claimed the jobs of two Australian Party leaders on its way to becoming law. The new tax will take effect next July. It puts a price of $23 per metric ton on carbon emissions, taxing the country's 500 most polluting companies, and then giving much of the money to individual consumers to compensate for higher prices of food, energy, and transportation. There's also a raft of grants for businesses to encourage investment in green technologies. Australia's Prime Minister Julia Gillard calls it a win for the nation.
Today's vote is a win for those who will seek their fortune and make their way by having jobs in our clean energy sector. It's a win for those who want our environment to be a cleaner environment and to see less carbon pollution.
Many prices will rise just a few cents as a result of the new tax, and the government says most families will get more in compensation than they pay in higher costs. But the law's ultimate success is still in doubt. Australia's opposition party, which currently leads in opinion polls, is promising to repeal the law if it comes to power in the next election. The opposition's climate change spokesman, Greg Hunt, says the Prime Minister broke an election pledge.
And the price of that betrayal will be higher electricity, higher gas, and higher grocery costs for Australian families, Australian pensioners, and Australian small business owners.
But many businesses are now stuck wondering whether to start spending on greener technologies or wait to see if the law is repealed under a new government. For NPR News, I'm Stuart Cohen in Sydney.
A couple of U.S. airlines are pioneering the use of biofuels. Today, Alaska Airlines was to fly passengers using a biofuel blend made partly from cooking oil. Bellamy Palethorpe from member station KPLU in Seattle reports on the challenges of shifting the airline industry to alternative fuels.
In recent years, the Alaska Air Group has focused on fuel efficiency to keep costs down and help the environment.
USO at the Puget Sound is always open and located on the mezzanine level of the main terminal.
At SeaTac Airport, the airline's Director of Government Relations, Megan Lawrence, is standing near her employer's ticket counter. She lists off innovations like fog-busting satellite technology, used to land in hard-to-reach locations and make flight paths more efficient.
So the next kind of big thing on the horizon, because efficiency can only get us so far in terms of reducing our carbon footprint, is the biofuels arena.
She says the biofuel they'll be using will provide a 10% reduction in carbon emissions compared to conventional jet fuel. They've bought enough for 75 flights to Washington, D.C. and Portland, Oregon, and she promises they won't pass any extra costs on to consumers. But this next step in Alaska Air's evolution isn't exactly the gold standard of green. This particular batch is sourced from used cooking oil that's not even local. It comes from deep fryers in Texas and is processed in New Orleans.
My name is Dean Williams, and I operate the fuel facility for SeaTac Airport.
Williams is a chemist who presides over what's essentially a huge gas station. He says Alaska Air's new biofuel will come via rail car and tanker truck, both of which increase the carbon footprint. But he says this batch of fuel is not really that different from conventional jet fuel. And in case you're wondering, it doesn't smell like French fries.
It smells a little better than the gas station in here. We have good air conditioning in here and good quality control, but that's one of the things about jet fuel. It is safe and clean and very highly regulated as far as quality.
Williams says you can blend in up to 50% biofuel if it passes certain chemical tests. With him is Bill Glover, Boeing's strategist for environmental policy. He says different airlines have different ways of reducing the air pollution they create. But before they can do that most effectively, the industry has to build a whole new supply chain for biofuels.
It's going to take a little while to get the infrastructure in place, get the volume up and get some of the economics more favorable. But our near-term target is 1% of all the aviation fuel to have some bio content by 2015.
Why?
Richard Abulafia is an aviation analyst with the Teal Group in Fairfax, Virginia. He thinks real progress is at least 15 years away.
What you've got is somewhere between advanced showmanship and expensive subsidies.
Abulafia says Alaska's demonstration project might not be getting direct subsidies, but the whole industry is getting huge tax breaks. Boeing's Bill Glover counters it's crucial for the biofuels industry to get this kind of support because air travel is only growing, as is the pressure to become energy independent and reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
We realize we have to take action to make sure